Hi, I'm Marisa McClellan, creator of Food in Jars.
And I'm Joy Manning, a writer focused on food and health.
Welcome to Local Mouthful. We're here to talk shop with obsessed home cooks everywhere. This week we're talking about pizza beans, pozole, and my attempts to keep an emptier, more streamlined fridge.
I really want to hear more about that.
but first, let's talk about something we read recently.
So I guess this is a byline brag, as we say on Facebook, but I wanted to share with you all a story I recently wrote for the Philadelphia Inquirer about ways to go out and enjoy dry January and what to drink during dry January. And you still have a little time to go out and live it up.
It's true. So I have to tell you a funny thing. I still get a physical Philadelphia Inquirer paper. I like just the tangibility of it. And so when the issue hit with this article in it, I hadn't seen your byline and I saw the headline. I was like, oh God, I hope Joy wrote this. That was literally my thought. I was like, Joy better have written this, because if any other writer in Philadelphia wrote this, that would just be wrong.
And I'll tell you, if it would have been a staffer, it would not have annoyed me. But if it would have been another freelancer, I would have been annoyed.
Yeah. And so when I saw that it was yours, I was like, ah, yes, there's justice in the world. Everything is how it should be.
Well, a lot of places are doing more to have wonderful, appealing, festive drinks, not just like a crappy mocktail, you know, or like just a soda-y, silly garnished, you know, whatever. Yeah. Like we've moved beyond that at last.
Yeah.
And one of the most exciting things in the article is some places now have really great non-alcoholic beer. The newly refurbished Royal Tavern here in Philadelphia has Athletics Brewing's a wonderful IPA.
That's awesome.
And they're based in Connecticut. So I bet listeners in other East Coast cities, I bet you if the rep is making great incursions here,
that
you're going to see them in other cities on the East Coast. And then most exciting of all, I can't remember whether I've talked about this on the podcast before or my six-pack came the day you were here recording a podcast.
It definitely came. I don't think we talked about it, though.
But Brooklyn Brewery, which is like one of the most celebrated craft breweries in America, has their own non-alcoholic beer now called Special Effects, and they are serving it at Farm and Fisherman.
That's awesome.
So like, it's not just that places have non-alcoholic options. They're getting really good. Like Forsythia in Old City has great seed lip cocktails. And I mean, the article was one part, you know, directory of where to go and what to drink, and one part sort of like my philosophy of dry January, you know? I don't think everybody is going to break up with alcohol forever like I did, but I do think it is worthwhile to have a 30-day experiment when you don't drink. It's a good way to look at your relationship with alcohol, to ask if it's what you want your relationship with alcohol to be like.
Yeah.
And especially when you go out to places where people are normally drinking, it gives you a chance to like learn new behaviors and have fun at happy hour without drinking.
Yeah, I liked that part of your article where you talked about how like you can change the associations and the like the kind of the neurological connections.
Right. It is. I mean, it really is like a brain. It's like rewiring your brain. Yeah. That's what you have to do. And you can start to do that. And if the end result is that alcohol is more optional than automatic for you, I think that's a huge win, even if people continue to drink.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of us go into a bar and automatically get a drink. We don't even ask ourselves, do I want to have an alcoholic beverage right now? You know?
Yeah.
It's just like the default action. And it would be better, you know, I think drinking culture in general would be safer if people, you know, ask themselves really in the moment, like, do I feel like drinking now? And get making that space for themselves not to want to drink. So of course I'll share the link in the article. If I overlooked your favorite spot in Philly, please tell me where it is. If you are anywhere else, and you have a favorite place in your city for non-alcoholic drinks, let me know that too. I maintain a list for myself for when I travel, and sometimes I share it, with other people who are traveling. It's just good to know.
Yeah. So funny thing, speaking of alcohol, I haven't had a drink in like a year and a half because I'm, you know, trying to get pregnant and then breastfeeding. And my cousin, their kid had their bar mitzvah this last weekend, and I had a sip of champagne at a champagne toast. And I was like, it immediately just made me feel like hot and gross. And I was like, oh, my body feels so much better when I don't drink any alcohol whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was nothing good. Nothing good about it for me.
And if you like your relationship with alcohol and it makes you feel good and it's a good part of your life.
Yeah.
Great. But I just think a lot of people are drinking without ever asking themselves, how does this really make me feel?
It's true.
Do I really want this? Well, let's talk more about this in the comment section for today's show, the show notes. And now let's talk about what's for dinner in your house, Marisa.
Yeah. So finally, after years of looking at the recipe and hearing people rave about it, I made what's kind of informally known across the internet as pizza beans. And basically it is like a gigante bean or a lima bean, that you cook and then you smother in a tomatoey sauce and top with mozzarella cheese. And Smitten Kitchen was kind of the first person to do it. But I've seen like there's a,
probably not to do it.
Well,
to popularize
it. I've seen, you know, Dinner with Julie. Julie, she's a Canadian food writer. I've mentioned her before. She posted something recently on her Instagram feed. I'd seen something in the New York Times. So it was like I was seeing it from multiple locations. And I was in DeBruno Brothers maybe a week ago, and they had the Rancho Gordo lima beans dried. And so I thought, perfect, because we have been trying to eat a little less meat, make things that can stretch for a couple of days.
That seems like a real leftover friendly thing.
Oh, yeah. And actually, spoiler, it was way better the second day, because the beans really have time to absorb all the tomato flavor. And so I didn't really do it the way any recipe said. I sauteed an onion. I added a bunch of garlic. I did a combination of tomato paste and a jar of my pizza sauce that I had canned a couple years ago, cooked it down, added a bag of baby spinach, and then I added the lima beans that I had cooked earlier in the day.
Freestyle pizza beans.
Freestyle. And then I put it in, you know, a big dish. I topped it with some mozzarella cheese, and I used just enough cheese to cover. It was not a thick, thick layer of cheese because I didn't want it to be crazy indulgent. I just wanted it to have that little bit of crackly crust. And it was great. It was so good. It was super filling. The first night we ate it by itself. The second night, because we had eaten a little bit more than half the first night, I made a big salad to go with it. And high marks. I would do it again. And I love those lima beans. I will say though, you remember when we talked many, shows ago about how you had made beans and they were delicious and you put them in something and it was disappointing?
Yes.
I had a little bit of that regret with this because the lima beans were so creamy and so wonderful on their own. I had just cooked them with, a shallot cut in half, a couple of garlic cloves and a stalk of celery, and they were perfect.
I know exactly how you feel.
And then I put them in the pizza beans and they were great. And I think that it was a more successful dish in terms of getting Scott to eat it, because I don't think he would have been really happy if I said, here's a bowl of lima beans and some broth. Like that would not have done it for him for dinner. It would have happily done it for me. But,
you know, I saw, just to take a little digression here, Bon Appetit's, they have all these great food videos, and a recent one has this woman, her name is Carla. I'm sure her last name, I'm blanking. She's a food director. She wrote a book called Where Cooking Begins. Sorry, Carla. But Carla did a video on cooking beans, and when she plated her brothy beans at the end, she put a bunch of toasted bread, like craggy homemade breadcrumbs on top.
Oh.
Maybe that would make it more appealing.
That sounds really good.
So.
But yeah, I would highly recommend the pizza bean approach. It feels, you know, I'm thinking a lot about like baby food. My guys are now 6 months old, and so we're starting this world of food. And I feel like in a few months, once they're handling things that are a little bit more solid and not just kind of doing purees, that something like that, I could kind of wipe off the beans a little bit so they're only a little bit tomatoey, and let them try the beans, maybe use a slightly smaller bean because their mouths are not very big. But it's like, it's something that could double as a happy dinner for us and a baby food situation.
Hopefully. Yeah. That would be great. I actually have plans to veganize that one.
Oh, do you?
Forgive me if I'm repeating myself, but I found a recipe on the blog. I can't believe it's not, or it doesn't taste like chicken.
Mm-hmm.
It's a vegan Canadian blogger. And she has a recipe for quote unquote life changing mozzarella.
Oh, interesting.
I think she's overselling it a bit, but it is very handy in recipes. Like I have been using it on pizza, and I think it would be really great, like blobbed into the pizza beans, and it would just give you because it's made with tapioca starch, it has a stretchiness. And also there's some sauerkraut in the mix, so it has like a tangy fermented. It's good.
Yeah, it sounds good.
It's not cheese and it's not life-changing, but it can make a recipe like that includes mozzarella, like something that I can make and it's good.
Yeah. And the recipe does call for you to add like some Parmesan to the mix. I had a little Pecorino Romano because that's what I had. And honestly, I don't think you need it as long as you make sure that your tomato sauce is really flavorful.
I would add nutritional yeast. And sometimes I like to do toasted breadcrumbs.
Yeah.
Like crunchy panko sauteed in some olive oil or something.
But I highly recommend it as a, like an easy thing. It's a happy make ahead. It would be really great if it was like if you were making several dishes over the weekend and then, you know, serving them, reheating them to serve later in the week. This is one that would be a great candidate for that.
There's no doubt. It's definitely an internet famous recipe.
Yeah.
Well, something that I have been enjoying lately is pozole. And if you follow me on Instagram, you may have seen me post a pozole, bowl of pozole a little while ago and with a comment that basically was like, this pozole,
Oh, no.
So I made it. And that's sort of how I felt about it. But then I had a total of 3 quarts of pozole, which pozole is a soup. Basically, it's a simple soup of simmered dried corn kernels, hominy. Mm-hmm. It's also called popcorn soup because the kernels do sort of pop as you cook them, and they're tender and very corny in flavor. And it's typically pretty simple. With just like some aromatics in the broth, and then you stir chili sauce in at the end.
Yeah.
And I used red chili sauce. So anyway, it wasn't like throw it away, meh, but it was like also not, I wasn't dying to eat it again. But then when I broke it out of the freezer and ate it again, it was wonderful. I don't know whether it was like the magic of it being in the freezer or like the magic of having food that you don't have to make. I don't know. I can't really explain it.
I imagine that giving that kind of bland hominy a chance to soak up that red chili sauce over time can only make it better.
Yeah. I think I might have put too much lime in it the first time. Oh. Pozole is really all about the toppings, right?
Yeah.
And so once you have this bowl of just brothy cooked corn kernels, basically, but they've been nixtamalized, you know, so they're not, it's not like regular corn. You know, you do put lime in it as a garnish, but I put too much lime in it, which made it a little overly sour. But then on subsequent bowls, I've got the topping mix for me just right, which is avocado, onion, very thinly sliced cabbage, red or green are both good. You can use crispy tortilla strips. I haven't done that out of laziness, but I'm sure that would be wonderful. And hot chilies. And if you're into dairy or meat, you can add shredded chicken or sour cream or like any kind of a cheese that you like in that situation. And so I went from like not really loving it to now thinking I'm going to make it again.
Oh, interesting.
I used Deborah Madison's recipe. The red chili sauce is like itself is pretty interesting. I don't know if you had it when we were in Santa Fe last year.
I sure did.
Okay, so how you make it is you saute onions and garlic in a little oil. Then you add some cumin, not a ton, maybe a teaspoon, maybe a quarter teaspoon. And then you add like a huge amount of New Mexico red chili powder, like a half cup of it.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
And then you add 2 cups of water.
Okay.
So it's like nothing like that's not how I would have thought you made it.
I would have thought it would start with like dried chilies.
Yeah.
Like whole dried chilies.
I thought I was going to be like pureeing something in the end. But it is very tasty. I think next time though, I want to do a green pozole, which will have fresh chilies in it. But I was definitely really into it. And I did use the Rancho Gordo pozole, of course, because I'm in the cult now of Rancho Gordo. But yeah, I would recommend it. I think it's quite delightful, especially all the cold weather we've been having lately.
Yeah. Which book is this in Vegetarian for Everyone or?
Vegetarian Cooking for Everyone, my fave.
Yeah.
There were a lot of really tempting recipes out there.
For the hominy?
For a pozole.
Yeah.
But so many, in fact, that I started to like, just wanted to really get down to basics. And because Deborah lives in New Mexico, I thought she would have an authentic take on the chili sauce and everything else. So like there's one on 101 cookbooks that I really want to try next time. So stay tuned for more pozole variations. The winter is young.
It sure is. It is definitely soup weather.
And I cannot say enough for being able to like defrost something, you know, and then especially that's like the best of both worlds because you have the soup, you defrost it, it's ready to go. Then you do your fresh topping. So it has like doesn't taste old or something.
Yeah, it's not just a rerun.
Right.
It's like a refreshed version.
So.
Well, I'm excited. Yeah, I, you know, I've never made pozole, but I mean, I've always meant to. So maybe someday.
Well, maybe. Well, I was going to say maybe I've inspired you now, but like, I don't know if you're having days to pursue culinary whims.
Well, I am cooking. I am, you know, like my resolution was to cook and just keep cooking, and I am cooking. It's not, and actually this takes us into our next topic pretty nicely. I'm cooking. It's not adventurous cooking. It's not like I'm cooking a lot of new or interesting recipes, but I am making dinner most nights. And some nights it's pretty scroungy, but, it's working. So what I wanted to talk about today was, keeping a more empty, streamlined fridge. In the past, I have always had a really crowded refrigerator.
You are a maximalist in life.
Yes, I am a maximalist. I like stuff. I like abundance. And my refrigerator always reflected it. And I don't have a big fridge, no. So I have a small kitchen, and, In my small kitchen, there's a spot for a refrigerator. And because my kitchen is from 1965, the spot for the refrigerator is designed for a 1965 refrigerator.
Is it, I know I've seen your fridge a lot of times, but is it one of the refrigerators that you are taller than the refrigerator?
No, it used to be.
Oh, okay.
So I have the smallest French door refrigerator that is on the market.
Okay.
There are only like three refrigerators in production today that fit the spot in my kitchen for a fridge.
Wow.
So I don't have a big fridge. And it's kind of narrow and deep, so things get lost. And, you know, it's like when I was doing a lot of, because I'm not really doing a lot of canning right now, but in the past when I've done a lot of recipe testing or canning, like things pile up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have been using things up and not opening new things. And I have been really just a little bit more careful about how I've been shopping for groceries. And the result is that my fridge is emptier and it makes my life easier, which you would think it would be the opposite. You'd think that more food.
Well, I will say that when we moved from the old house to the new house,
uh-huh,
we intentionally bought a shallower refrigerator because things would go like recede to the back of the old refrigerator, yeah, never to be seen again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. And so it's just nice because it means that I know what's in there. I am using things up more promptly and it is making my life easier. And like when I'm not buying produce thinking, well, maybe I'll, you know, I have a realistic understanding of my capacity for cooking right now.
Are you planning?
I'm sort of planning. At the start of the week, I'll look at what I have, what I kind of want to make. So like for this week, we're having fried rice tonight because we got Chinese food over the weekend and there was rice left over. And so today I went to Trader Joe's and I bought vegetables to put in fried rice, and I bought vegetables and ingredients to make a big pot of, my ground beef stew or soup for the week. So, and that's just like use a pound of ground beef and then a ton of vegetables and some cans of or jars of tomatoes. And it makes a big pot of soup that we can eat for at least 3 nights. And that's kind of it. Those are my cooking
aspects. Because you don't need anything else.
I don't need anything else when I keep a bag, either a head of cabbage around or some salad making stuff to make lunch for myself. We've got eggs. I've got yogurt because the babies are eating yogurt right now, but I'm just not keeping a lot around that's extra.
You don't say, oh, this looks good.
Exactly. I'm not pleasure shopping right now. It is all about survival. And it's really working for me.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many places in life where things are cluttered. You know, we got a storage unit to move things out of the apartment, mm-hmm, so that there'd be more space for the babies.
So you could make room for double the people.
Yeah, exactly. And that's been really great, but it's like I'm still juggling stuff and we've got a pile of stuff that needs to be moved over there. So the less I have to deal with in terms of maintaining the fridge, it just feels better.
Is it helping you keep the fridge itself cleaner?
Well, here's the funny thing. I still haven't like done a big clean of the refrigerator, which really has to happen because it's dirty.
We did it in the last week in December.
Did you?
Maybe even New Year's Eve day, because I said to Dan, I cannot go into 2020 with this filthy fridge.
No, my fridge is disgusting.
And it was so filthy that my sister, when she was here a couple of times ago, she was like, she opened the fridge and she said, oh, do you guys clean the fridge? So like when, I mean, do you notice the cleanliness of other people's fridges?
Not really.
No. So like it must have been bad.
Yeah. Like when you put the milk down on the top shelf, it kind of crunches because yeah. there's just grit.
I've been there.
Yeah. I need to clean the fridge.
It doesn't take as much time as you think.
I know. I just have to do it.
Especially if it's a little emptier.
Yeah. But yeah, I feel like, of all of the life changes that have happened with the arrival of these babies, I don't hate this one. Not that I hate many of the life changes, but this feels really good.
I have to tell you, I don't have the stress of feeding two little babies mm-hmm. or taking care of them. But like, I pretty much never buy something that I don't have a clear intention for.
See, I always used to. Like, I always was like, well, you know, that sounds nice. Or, oh, that's a really good deal on that. Let me get that and I'll use it for something. And then, like, there's something that lingers or it's a little bit old by the time you get to it. I feel like, in part, I've turned into kind of a European grocery shopper in that I shop a lot more frequently and buy small amounts of things, in part because if I'm grocery shopping, I'm pushing a stroller.
Yeah.
And there's only so much you can get home on a double stroller where the diaper bag is taking up most of the undercarriage.
I know that I've said this. I must have said this before. And as much as I hate Whole Foods, I still get Whole Foods delivery sometimes.
Do you?
Through Amazon.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I mean, I don't feel good about it, but like.
We do Wegmans delivery sometime.
Wait a minute. Wegmans delivers to Philadelphia?
Yeah. Through Instacart. You can get Wegmans delivered.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And that's nice because, like, you can get all of the, like, regular grocery store staples from that.
I wonder if it would be more expensive than what I get through, because I have an Amazon Prime account.
I don't know. Huh. It doesn't, it's like, if you spend a certain amount, it's not, like, it's often, there's often, like, promotions where if you spend a certain amount or you buy, like, three things from one brand, delivery is free.
That's so good to know, Marisa.
But, yeah, but I hate, honestly, I hate other people picking up my produce.
I don't like that either, but I don't know. Sometimes it's better than the alternative.
It's true. And we have certainly done that. I've actually gotten Instacart also delivers from Aldi, which has been useful at times. I've done that because it's like I know that you can throw a bunch of produce in the cart and it's all going to be relatively affordable.
The other thing that ordering your groceries online does is it totally eliminates impulse buys.
That is true.
It cannot be done.
Yeah. I'm still appreciating the like that I'm just managing to cook and that keeping the fridge a little emptier has helped support that.
Well, it's always helpful to know what you have. And like, yeah, if your fridge is crammed, it's hopeless.
Yeah, totally.
We found a lot of scary stuff when we cleaned our fridge in December. But that's all a distant memory now. And I don't know, 4 weeks later, 3 weeks later, it's only slightly sticky.
That's good. Yeah, I have some sticky spots.
I would love to be that type of person that like cleans the fridge out every month, but I just don't see that happening.
For me, I clean the fridge more on a piecemeal basis. I never do the whole thing all at once.
That's Dan's school. Yeah. That drives me up a wall. I want it to be all clean.
Yeah. How are you doing on your food resolutions for the year? Have you felt like they're going well?
I've been planning my meals and maintaining my calendar like a boss.
Hey, that's awesome.
Mainly because when you are sticking to a special diet, it's kind of like the only way to ensure success, I mm-hmm. think. So far, so good. I've obviously, well, not obviously, like I'm going, this is my 14th week on a completely vegan diet.
Wow. That's so awesome.
Pretty cool. It's not 100% healthy.
It's impossible to be perfectly virtuous all the time.
My sister and her husband brought vegan cupcakes last night and I had half of one. So like, I know that that's just like possibly less healthy than its conventional alternative. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. They tend to use a lot more sugar in vegan baked goods to cover up.
But anyway, I'm just saying, like, I'm doing great in that respect. So, like.
Yeah. Are you back to making hummus on a regular basis?
Yes. Today, while I was, before we started recording, Marisa came in and she's like, oh, the house smells good. I was like, I made dinner in the middle of the afternoon because I've got stuff to do later. But the whole time I was making it, I was like dipping carrot sticks into hummus. And hummus makes everything better in life.
It really does.
Before we wrap up, I want to talk about something else I'm loving.
I want to hear it.
Besides hummus. And it is Trader Joe's masala veggie burgers.
Mmm, those sound good.
I've definitely said that the new Trader Joe's in Center City is great because it's right by Dan's office. He goes a lot. It's not crowded. So like, we are now we're in the Trader Joe's zone. Yeah.
I will say that new store is a pleasure to shop at. The aisles are so wide. They're never crowded.
Yeah. And it's a little worrying, that it's never crowded, but I'll take it for now. So the Trader Joe's masala veggie burger is very delicious, but I have found I don't really like it on a bun. But I love it like with a side of white rice and like a dollop of sriracha sauce.
Sounds good.
It's really good.
So like tell me a little bit more about it. Like what is it? Nubbly, like what's
in it? It's like a samosa. It's almost like a samosa filling in veggie burger form.
Huh. That sounds great.
I love it. I don't know what makes them think it's a burger because it's not only is it a little weird on a burger bun, it's soft, so it squishes out.
Yeah.
But I just really, it just, and it also reminds me of like how much I prefer that type of a veggie burger to like
a grain based one or
the Beyond Meats of the world, you know?
Yeah. I'm not really into the Beyond Meats, but I do love, because I grew up with garden burgers, which...
Oh, I love those as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have that really nice texture with mushrooms and grains and stuff.
Trader Joe's also has a high protein burger, which I tried. I didn't love it.
Yeah.
And I saw that they're coming out with like their own branded like Beyond Meat type burger, I think this week. I don't know. Do you think you'll try it?
I'm really not a fan of the Impossible Beyond Meat burgers.
What about Scott?
Scott has had one once and thought it was fine, but from a points perspective, from a Weight Watchers points perspective, they tend to be a little higher in points than meat.
Than even the regular burger.
Yeah.
That makes sense to me.
So for him, there's not really a lot of incentive. And, you know, we're not really eating a lot of meat. Basically right now, I kind of have a goal to only have beef once a month. And that's, you know, I'd rather have beef once a month and have that be my entire beef intake and burger intake than eat a fake burger on a regular basis.
Some people are crazy about them. I don't know. Yeah. I'll stick to the Trader Joe's masala type burgers, the veggie burgers. There's a lot of different veggie burgers at Trader Joe's.
You know, it's funny. I've never even looked. I need to take a look next time I go.
So, friends, if you have your favorite that is not the masala burger or the high protein burger, come to the show notes and tell me which one to buy next, because I would like one that I loved on a bun. It's like a traditional burger burger.
Have you ever thought about making a big batch of veggie burgers from scratch and freezing them for easy grab and go access?
Yes and no. I used to do that a lot with this red lentil burger recipe I liked, but that like the masala burger was like squishy. Like, I don't know. I feel like I don't have the perfect veggie burger recipe. Now that I'm doing a lot of experiments with the seitan type meat replacement stuff, maybe I'll find one that I love in that way.
But I have a black bean burger recipe that I love a lot.
And it doesn't squish?
No, but the secret is a two-part cook. What so do you like mean? I cook it, I bake them, and then I put them in a pan and do a little sear action. So it helps them hold together because it forms a crust.
Interesting. Is this the freestyle black bean burger or is there a recipe?
I have a recipe. I'll send it to you. I think it's actually one I did. I may have done it for Table Matters a million years ago.
Well, I'll Google it or you'll share it with me.
I will send it to you.
And if we find it, we'll try to share it with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I think that about does it for this week's Local Mouthful. Our thanks go out to Dan Call for editing the show, to Saul Rosenbaum for designing our logo, and to Raina Rose for providing the music. And thank you for listening. If you like what you hear, make sure to subscribe via iTunes or your favorite podcasting app. Please follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Local Mouthful. Sign up for our newsletter, catch up on past episodes, and check out our show notes at localmouthful.com. Until next time, happy eating.